Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. You can find me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane, managing editor for USA Today's Texans Wire. You can find them on Twitter at The Texans Wire. Of course, the website's the best place. You should make it your homepage, as a matter of fact. TexansWire.USAToday.com and just continually hit F5 just all the time.
Is that refresh?
Yeah, refresh. It'll help us. It'll help us. I'm joined that voice you heard. That's John Crumpler. He does an excellent job. I mean, he is the Jose Altuve of this draft coverage on the Texans Wire. He's belting it out of the park. He's just unbelievable.
Thank you, Mark.
And Mark. Where can they find you on Twitter?
You guys can find me on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. Thanks for the love towards these mock drafts. We just hit 1,600 followers. I appreciate it. And Mark, I just wanted to say, I like being called the Jose Altuve a lot more than Mark texted me this week that I was Kareem Jackson. And I was like, what do I even think of that?
Hey, man, I mean, I liked Kareem Jackson. He was, in my opinion, I know he didn't get a Pro Bowl, but he was the heart of that team. And I really think that they made a mistake in letting him go. And I understand because he was in his 30s. I get it, but maybe they should.
No, they did make a mistake. I mean, when they switched him to safety, he should have been a Pro Bowler that year. It made all the sense in the world to bring him back. And instead, they let him walk. I think Tyrann Mathieu walked the season before, right?
No, it was the same season. So going into 2019, you have Tyrann Mathieu and Kareem Jackson that walked. By the way, here, I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a story. Okay. I'm still nervous about saying who it was, but I was catching a flight out of Indianapolis at the Combine, and it was the day they tagged Jadeveon Clowney. And I saw an individual with the Houston Texans. And I sidled up to him and I said, so what's the thinking in tagging Clowney? And of course, this individual chuckled. And then they explained that they were just really cap conscious of the fact that they had to pay Watson. Clowney. And they also mentioned trying to bring Tyrann Mathieu back on a 3-year deal. So there was element that wanted Mathieu back at least.
That's really depressing. Also, though, the Chiefs kind of blew up the safety market to get him, though. There wasn't a lot we could have done there.
Yeah. And really, he had his rehab year, let's say, with Houston. And then he got back to being Honey Badger in Kansas City.
I feel like he wasn't even that good with us. And when I think about it, do you think that was us? Was that a scheme thing, or was that he needed one more year to figure it out?
I think that – I don't know. I felt like he was good for the locker room. I think that he worked in some ways with Houston. It really was the proverbial fresh start for him. And I don't know if it's because he was playing in a Romeo Crennel 3-4 as opposed to the type that they had with Bruce Arians in Arizona, but it worked for him.
Yeah. Well, we don't talk about that era of Texans football anymore. We have Nick Caserio as the face of the franchise now. Who needs good players, Mark?
And joining us now on the Texans Talk Podcast is Coach Bo Hembray from Warren High School. Coach, I was talking with Andrew Hutchinson from 247 Sports, and he said that you're the offensive line coach at Warren, right?
No, I'm not the offensive line coach.
That's what he said.
That's funny.
Hey, I need you, by the way, to come to Texarkana because Coach Barry Norton left. And so they got an opening for athletic director and head football coach. I think he'd be great.
When did he leave? Here lately?
Yeah. Yeah, just recently.
Yeah, I did not know that. We played them there last year.
Yeah, yeah, at Razorback Field. Hey, the Razorback we want to find out about is, of course, Treylon Burks, who you coached there at Warren. Just tell me a little bit about this receiver that's projected to go in the first round. What kind of a kid is he?
Oh, he's a great kid. I think that he's a better kid than he is a football player, and we all know how good of a football player he is. But he's been around our program since he was in the third grade, and he carries himself with a lot of great manners. He's yes sir, no sir, and that's the thing that I'm getting back from a lot of the scouts and teams. No matter where he's at, they all say, Coach, is he always like that, or is he just doing it for us? And he's been that way ever since I've known him, and he's just a really, really good kid.
Yeah, that's the question I had was, are NFL teams calling you guys in Warren? Are they coming to Warren? Because I know that when there was a receiver from Baylor that came out of Mount Pleasant, the Packers, they sent scouts to Mount Pleasant and talked to everybody. What's the interaction with the NFL been like with you guys?
It's been crazy. It started back in the fall during the season. Actually, we had assistant GM show up, and they would just interview different people at our school district and make sure that, and they didn't let you know they were coming. That was the neat thing. And I got to be really good friends with a few of them. Well, I ain't gonna say friends, but being able to talk to them through the whole process, and that they were really good for me. But they don't want you to know they're coming, and their biggest thing was they wanted to see if anything had happened in high school, anybody say something bad, and obviously for Treylon, that they would come back by before they would leave and say, you know, they've been doing this for so many years, and they've never been to a place where there was not one bad thing said about a kid, and that's just true about him and about how Treylon is. But, you know, they don't want to leave any, you know, I've had, you know, guys who went in the fourth round with Jairus Wright and Greg Childs and Chris Gregg. So we wasn't used to, you know, actually a first round draft choice. So we didn't know, you know, to expect that. And they came by and what they say, they all said it's pretty much the same thing is, you know, if you go to their college town, if something happened then, it's going to get out. But, you know, a lot of times in high school, there's a lot of towns that can cover stuff up, but if you go around that town, you'll be able to find something that might have happened, but they couldn't find anything with Treylon.
Yeah, and with living in Warren, Arkansas, you're talking about a town of 6,000 people. It's almost like living on a reality show, and it's just in terms of if something's there, boy, they know about it. And as a matter of fact, Lovie Smith, the coach of the Houston Texans right now, he said that's what he loved about growing up in Big Sandy was it was a small town and everybody knew everybody. And so everybody knew your grandparents and they would talk. So if you were out of line, I mean, it just really went down the chain.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, it's a small town and stuff gets around really quick. And, you know, he was just – the thing about Treylon was, I mean, everybody knew him growing up. I mean, he loved to hunt. He loved to fish. And so – and our town's known for deer hunting and, you know, he's a big hunter as everybody knows now. And so if he wasn't playing football or at school, he was either hunting or fishing. And, you know, that's just something that he did.
No, my apologies. So you mentioned that he hunts and he fishes, and there's duck hunting down there, right? Because that's near Stuttgart, right?
Yeah, we're about an hour and 15 minutes from Stuttgart.
Okay, but still, that's the duck hunting and everything.
Yes.
Okay. So what's your favorite story? What's a good Treylon Burks story?
For me, I have a bunch, but, you know, the main one for me is that, you know, he's been our ball boy since he was in the third grade, and I don't know if y'all have watched much film on Traylon or watched much or many Arkansas games, but, you know, Traylon was a really good football player. Like, when I say football player, I'm not saying a wide receiver. I'm saying a football player. For us, he was our wheel linebacker. He was our punter. He can punt the football, you know, as good as anybody you've seen. He kicked off. He could kick in the end zone every time. He played receiver. He played quarterback. So when I say football player, he's a football player. He could play so many different positions. But when he was a sophomore or when he was a freshman at Arkansas, he would catch punts and he would catch them over his head. He wouldn't catch them like a normal person would on punts. And so but I saw him doing that as a fourth grader. We'd be out in warm-ups and our kickers would go out early and they'd go out before I even went out and they would just punt and kick like most people do. And he would be catching punts like that. And I'd come out and the opposite coach would go, "Coach, what grade is this kid in? Is he a junior high kid?" And I'm like, "No, he's a fourth grader." And they'd be just in awe of him, even as a fourth grader, the way he could catch punts, you know, guys who are kicking it 35, 40 yards in the air. And he would use his hands and he would catch it. I don't know if y'all seen him do that or not as a freshman at Arkansas. Now, Arkansas, Coach Morris, he didn't like him catching them that way. And they tried to change him, but he's just done it for so long, it was hard for him to change.
Yeah, because even Bill Parcells said that you got to catch it in front of you. Don't try to catch it in that manner. Yeah, it goes against the conventional football sense to catch it that way. But that's part of what just makes Traylon Burks so unique. And how, like, when did you all see that? You mentioned that he was a football player, but in talking with just some team doctors throughout the SEC West, you know, they mentioned that these players have just uncommon traits, like uncommon healing ability. Just when did you notice that there was something different about Traylon?
When he was young, I mean, like fifth and sixth grade, he was a freak of nature on the football field. He was probably a better baseball player. I mean, everybody talks about that now, but honestly, he probably was a better baseball player than he was football. And then he also played basketball, and he could do so many. He dominated the game from a young age. You know, he was playing peewee football as a third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grader, and they had a Traylon Burks rule where he could not touch the ball unless they threw it to him down the field. They couldn't hand it to him. They couldn't snap it to him. He had to run at least 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, and they could throw him the ball. That's the only way Traylon could touch it in peewee. And then when he got in the seventh grade, you know, obviously there's no rules anymore, and then he kind of just dominated from that point forward. And then we moved him up as a ninth grader. You know, he played on the high school team as a ninth grader, and he dominated and got offers as a ninth grader with you know, that's when his offer started coming in about middle way through his ninth grade year.
Looking at Traylon's ability, what NFL team, not a specific NFL team, but what teams, what offenses do you think that he would excel in?
I don't think it's going to matter. I think that whoever gets him is going to get a steal. I don't care if he goes first or 32nd in the first round. Whoever gets him is going to get a steal. I'm saying that from a coach's standpoint. Is it biased? It might be. But you tell me, all right, you watch college football, obviously, right? You watch college football. And the SEC is the toughest conference by far. I mean, and you go look at these other receivers everybody's comparing him to, which is kind of funny to me, is – and I'm going to ask y'all a question. All right, I want y'all to answer this, okay? Who is Arkansas' second receiver?
And I even watched the games.
And can you tell me who Arkansas' second receiver is?
No.
All right, so you're telling me that this guy played in the SEC at Arkansas, and everybody knew they had to stop him, and they still couldn't stop him. All right, then you go to the guys he's being compared to right now. All right, you go to Ohio State. You got Garrett Wilson. Who's the second receiver?
Chris Olave.
All right, you know, so how can you go to Alabama? You say, all right, Jameson Williams. Who's the second receiver?
John Metchie.
You can name one. You can name one. You can't name one at Arkansas. So, well, Nick Saban's probably the best defense coordinator in the nation. Would y'all agree? Or one of?
Absolutely.
And he still didn't have a game plan to stop one guy. And that should, you know, as a coach, and I think scouts know that. I think all the media heads is talking about this guy's being ranked, you know. It's kind of comical because as a coach, you know, if you got one guy to stop, you should be able to stop that guy. If you got two or three guys to stop, that's a little bit harder. Would you know? So to me, it's not going to matter. You know, he went from our offense at Warren, he was really good in. He went to Chad Morse's offense, he was really good in. And then he went to Kendall Briles' offense, and he was really good in. So I think wherever he goes, he's going to fit in real quick. It's funny to me to listen to all these media heads talk about, well, he can't play outside. Well, that's his negative. Well, the question should be, why didn't he play outside? Nobody's asked that question. Well, he didn't play outside because at Arkansas, they didn't switch their receivers. The L stayed on the left, the R stayed on the right. The only person that went both sides was the slot. So that's the reason they put him inside, because he was their best receiver. And for their offense, they can move. He could go right and left. Whereas they didn't flip their outside guys. Well, then you look back at what he did as far as when he was outside, what did he do? Well, they threw him 9 go balls. He caught 8 of them, and the other one was a pass interference. So I don't know. It's just, you know, I'm biased. I understand that. But also, I'm a football coach, and I watched him game after game dominate the SEC, and everybody knew he was getting the football.
Well, and go ahead.
But that was my question. It's like everybody's got all these questions about him, but, you know, all you got to do is turn the film on.
Well, I know that at Arkansas he had, and I'm just thinking in the 2019 season alone, you had John Stephen Jones. Okay, maybe 18-2. But John Stephen Jones, Ty Story, the kid from Charleston.
That was Ty's story. You're talking about the kid in the draft with him, Cole Kelly.
Yeah, Cole Kelly. He went to Southeast Louisiana. Story right. Went to Western, to Western Kentucky. There was that kid that followed Chad Morris from SMU. So that's 4. You had KJ Jefferson and then Felipe Frank. So he had 6 quarterbacks throughout his college career. And really, honestly, 2019, he had about, you know, 4 of them, and right. He was still able to be productive.
Yes, in the SEC West. Yeah. You know, that was huge. That's the thing that just, you know, he's 6'3", 6'2 and a half, 225 pounds. I mean, he's huge, but he's a huge character kid. The thing about Traylon Burks is he's a winner first. I mean, wherever he goes, they're going to win because he, you know, you look at Arkansas. When he got to Arkansas, he went to Arkansas when going to Arkansas wasn't very popular.
Let me give context to that, by the way, folks.
What's that?
No, let me just give some context to that, by the way. I know you hear about Brett Bielema in Wisconsin, and he came from – okay, the program under Brett Bielema was terrible. Nobody was there at the Arkansas-Missouri game at Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium in 2017. Chad Morris was so bad, he got fired in the middle of the 2019 campaign. They didn't even win an SEC game in 2018. So the times were horrendous. And he chose Arkansas. Like I said, as Bielema was part of just kind of the slow demolition of the program, and Chad Morris was there. He could have left when Chad Morris was fired. And he stayed. He didn't transfer portal. So that just to provide context for how horrendous Arkansas football has been.
Yeah, and it was tough, you know. Brett Bielema was good to us. I mean, he's the one that started recruiting Traylon. But you know, as you said, it was just tough because they wasn't getting the top players. And when Traylon went there, it wasn't a popular decision for, you know, as far as really good football players. He wanted to stay at home. He wanted to try to build something, and he was able to do that. But to say that, you know, I think that Traylon's the type of kid that he don't care where he goes. He can go to the worst NFL team or the best NFL team. He's going to do whatever he can to change that team. He's going to be a team guy. And you don't see that much with a kid in today's world. All right, for instance, I'm going to give you an example. When he was a junior, we won a state championship, or we got beat in a state championship game. He had an unbelievable game. We got beat. But his rule was, from me was, and is, you don't come off on defense. If you take a break, you got to take a break on offense. Most kids who are one of the top receivers in the nation would have an attitude about that because they want to build up stats or whatever. There was times where I had to make Traylon go back in the game on offense because he wanted the guy behind him to play. That tells you what kind of guy, and he would be like, "Coach, you're not going to score." So, I mean, that's just the type of kid he was. He was a team. He's a team first guy.
All right. Well, you're going to have me saying calling the Hogs here in a moment. So we better let you go, Coach. Bo Hembree, we really appreciate this insight into one of the more fascinating and talented receivers in the 2022 NFL draft. And let me ask you this. Are you all going to have a draft party in Warren? I mean, what are you going to do for Thursday night?
Where I'm not for sure where we're having it yet, but we are doing it somewhere. He's not going to Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, again, we really appreciate it, Coach.
All right. Thank you.
Well, that was nice to hear from Coach Bo Hembree from Warren High School, the high school of Traylon Burks in Warren, Arkansas. What did you think of that? What did you think of the insight? What did you glean?
I thought it was always, it's always pretty interesting to hear coaches talk about these young athletes as they're progressing, because pretty quickly talent shows in sports. So him talking about getting offers his freshman year, that's special. And then citing how fun it's been to watch Traylon in the SEC. And it's true. He really hasn't had a legitimate receiver to play across from, and kind of gets me excited just to see where he ends up and the kind of talent it's going to open up the field for Traylon Burks.
Yeah. And when he talked about how NFL teams were going and talking to him and Warren, that to me was interesting because it's, like these teams knew heading into this 2021 season that he was going to be special. And so they wanted to do all their homework. And that is interesting that that the high school, where they went to high school and their hometown reveals a lot more, because if you can uncover some secret there as mm-hmm. their background, well, then, you've got it. You've got a real insight into their character. So I thought it was fascinating because, like I said, I remember, and I can't remember the receiver's name that came out of Mount Pleasant. He went to Baylor and it was for the 2017 draft, but I remember the Packers, they came to Mount Pleasant and they talked to everybody. They're talking again, like a small town of about 10,000 people in Northeast Texas. And they tried to uncover every stone. So I think character-wise, Traylon Burks is going to be that guy. And it sounds like, he'll be one of your can-do guys that loves football. But is it too much of an investment, given all the other needs on the roster right now? That's my issue with Traylon Burks and the Texans.
Yeah, I don't think he's the guy you probably want to spend the 13th pick on. He's going to come out somewhere between my fourth and fifth wide receiver. He's a playmaker, but hasn't had the most kind process towards him in terms of his off-the-field testing. And I was personally not a big advocate of taking a receiver at 13. So I would agree with you, Mark. Probably not going to work out, because Burks' perfect range is somewhere between, I think it'll be 18 and 25, and Houston is not picking there.
Yeah. If Houston were picking in the late 20s, or just even in the 20s, and they pick Treylon Burks, I think that'd be good value. But at 13, I think that that's just too rich for that, for Treylon Burks. And again, you know, I might be a little biased when it comes to it, but not really. I'm just playing around. Let's move on to really what a lot of fans are going to be grading night one on. And that's what type of first round combos that Houston comes up with their number 3 overall, number 13 overall pick. So I'm going to present these combos to you. I'm going to present these combos to you, John. And okay. I'll be honest, I almost called you Jordan. I don't know why. It's like I was having a flashback to when I used to work with Jordan Ross, or you've been spending so much time with Jordan Pun. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Mark. I know my own name.
Right.
I put the draft coverage on my back and you.
Wow. Yeah. I call him Kareem Jackson and now Jordan. But let's start off with the easy one. And we'll get an article on this at Texans Wire. Let's start off with an easy one. What would you grade the first round combo of Ahmad Gardner and Kyle Hamilton?
That'd be an A plus. For me, I don't know if that's, it might not be the best value in terms of you want to rebuild the trenches ideally. And I know it's a big priority for this team, but there's so much good depth within the interior offensive line class. They come in the way of Sauce, who's undeniably cornerback one, probably has the best chance to be the lockdown guy, complete technician with how he covers receivers. And then Hamilton, he's my number one player in the class. That would transform the secondary. It would change the defense and really give the Texans an identity. That's an A-plus for me, Mark.
Yeah, as I said, I don't think that there are enough pluses to put on that A-plus, because it also gives you an identity and it says they're the no-fly Texans. That's what they see. And then really, I'll tell you, one of the secrets of the Tampa 2, I know that they had Warren Sapp and they had Simeon Rice, but just in general, when you go to Chicago, you don't really remember too much. You had Tommy Harris, I think, who played defensive tackle, but their edge rushers in the Tampa 2 when Levy Smith was there, they weren't really the guys. It was Peanut Tillman and it was their linebacking core with Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher. So,
yeah, I mean, hypothetically, the front four is supposed to get it done, but there are more than one way to skin a cat.
Yes. All right. Moving on to the next combo. What would you think? This one is actually went live Wednesday night on Texans Wire. It was part of a mock draft Pro Football Focus did. What would you do if it was Ike McQuanu and Jordan Davis?
It's probably a B for me. It isn't sexy, but it's two really good players with well-defined roles. Ikwonu's going to come in and start immediately at left guard and could play a big part in making the run game more respectable. And I love Jordan Davis. If Kyle Hamilton and Jermaine Johnson aren't there, Jordan Davis is probably my number one guy at pick 13. And he's just going to come in and be a run stuffer. He's a unicorn of a prospect with a chance to develop into a legitimate pass rusher as he gets those reps. Probably call it a B+. It isn't sexy.
That's how I felt about it. Now, you'll notice in the mock draft Pro Football Focus did, they actually ran, I think, with one of our ideas. And that's, they had a trade with the Saints. So the Saints moved up to 13. And then Houston at, I believe, 15 or 16. That's where they got Jordan Davis. And I think in a trade back situation, that, you know, that would
that'd be even better.
Yeah. That's what would boost the grade. That those would be the bonus points of, like, you know, name Garfield's most hated day of the week for bonus points.
Yeah.
All right. Next, Kayvon Thibodeau and Charles Cross.
I love Kayvon, but I don't think Charles Cross is what this team needs right now. I'd be pretty disappointed if they went in that direction. He's almost exclusively a tackle. That's a C for me. I really don't like, maybe I can give it a C+ because Kayvon Thibodeau is my number one, and probably my number two. I love Hamilton, but he's a difference maker. Cross isn't my guy.
If they went with that, that would feel like Nick Caserio reached for needs and panicked. I think that would be the narrative out of night one. If they went with Thibodeau and Cross, it'd be like, oh, well, Trayvon Walker wasn't there, and neither was Aiden Hutchinson, so they panicked and got Kayvon Thibodeau. And then Ike Mukwunu wasn't there, and Gardner wasn't there, and Hamilton went as well, so they panicked, and they grabbed Charles Cross. It just looks like panicking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think KT is a panic move. I think he's the perfect fit for Jonathan Grenard. He's probably my number one choice at third overall, Mark. But Charles Cross definitely feels like, screw it, we're taking the best player available.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next up, Kayvon Thibodeau and Derek Stingley.
That's an A-. There's just a lot of risk with those two guys, but the talent is so good. I mean, that could be the foundation of the defense, or you could see a scenario where Stingley can't stay on the field and maybe the character concerns on Kayvon have some merit. But I would be really happy with that. That's two of the five most talented players in the draft. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, you talk about the high upside. That's what that would signify. I would have to pan it, given the fact that you've got, I just don't like Stingley as a cornerback. So I don't know that I'd want him at 13. If you got him on a trade down, I might like it. All right, next up, Ike Mukwunu and Garrett Wilson.
Mark, I don't think you could get Stingley any lower. I don't think he'd get past Baltimore at worst. But sorry, that's a different point. That's closer to a C+, B-. That really feels like you're reaching to elevate the offense there. I don't know how I feel about taking a receiver at 13th overall, and you're really leaving Lovie's defense out to dry, and it has to improve in the back end. Would you disagree with me there?
Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah, it's like investing in Davis Mills, but just doing it no matter what, whatever it takes. As opposed to doing what I think they should do is just add best player available, which I know contradicts what I said about, well, you got to have the no fly zone Texans as well. But that's just because that particular combination of Gardner and Hamilton, I think is too dynamic to pass up on. But in this situation, it's just, it feels kind of like reaching. All right. Let's bring some sauce back to the discussion. What if they had Gardner and Wilson?
That's a B for me. That's new era NFL, a building from the perimeter in, which I think you can justify. But those are two of the deepest positions in the draft, and it might leave me a little disappointed that that's what they invested in. That early when you could get a really good corner or a really good receiver at 37th overall.
Yeah. I like the sauce, but in terms of Wilson, I don't know that I'd like that particular selection at 13. Again, with a qualifier, what if it were a trade back? But I don't particularly favor that one either. And finally, Ike Mukwunu and Charles Cross. If they just invested in the offensive line, to hell with it?
That's the F- for me. It's just not a good allocation of resources. It's more offensive line than you frankly need. It leaves a big question mark of what you do with Titus Howard. And it really ignores all the other weaknesses. This team doesn't have great playmakers. They don't have defensive playmakers. They don't have defensive backs. I would be extremely, extremely disappointed.
Yeah, that's negative for me. There's no way that I'd do that. And it would be universally panned. I mean, you would not believe the F grades that would come flying in If they mm-hmm. didn't, of course, I don't even. It's almost as fanciful to think that could happen as it would be that they could just get, really, honestly, Gardner and Hamilton. Because I think that, I think to pull that off, that's going to take some trading to pull that off, you know?
Yeah. Gardner and Hamilton?
Yeah, you might have to trade up to get Hamilton.
You might. It's really about Atlanta for me. If he makes it past 8, I think he's going to make it to 13. I don't see the Seahawks, the Jets, or the Commanders taking him. And the Vikings have some more pressing needs. I think that would be a good trade spot if Pittsburgh and New Orleans wanted to come up for their quarterback. But yeah, you might have the deal if you really want Hamilton. I think I'll ask you now, what is your dream duo?
I mean, and it is, it's Gardner and Hamilton, because I got my cornerback that shut down that tackles, and I've got my safety who can play a variety of positions. That's my duo. Because the way I look at it is, if they can lock down the secondary, then the pass rush will come, because Jonathan Greenard just keeps taking steps in his development.
You need more. I think I like Kayvon Thibodeau and Hamilton a hair more, because you do need two edges. And as much as Greenard might develop, if you can get both those guys pressing inwards, that's when you're really going to see Malik Collins and Roy Lopez be able to take advantage.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's move on. Do you think that Houston is going to have a relatively small draft class proportional to their picks? Because when I look at round 6, for example, you got 3 6th rounders, and you got that 7th rounder there. I just feel like Nick Caserio could use them as part of a package to move up and take someone he really wants on early day 3 or even late day 2.
I don't think it'll be a small class because it's 11 picks, but I don't think they'll make all those picks, certainly. I agree with you that they're probably going to move up.
And who do you think they'll take? Like, who's someone you would package to try to go get?
I think going from 68 to the 50 to – sorry that I didn't answer this first. I think going from 68 to the 50 to 60 range and targeting a running back would be reasonable. You could also target a defensive back there. I mean, something I would personally like that the team wouldn't do is I imagine Roger McCreary probably goes somewhere between 50 and 60. I would move up from 68 to go get a guy like him. You can move up from 80 to go to that 60 to 70 range to make sure you get the first tight end on your board. Really, it's just getting into the top 100 or even moving 107 to get back into day 2 would make a lot of sense, just because that's where the real value is at tight end, wide receiver, defensive back. And they have too many day 3 picks that probably won't make the team.
Yeah. And that's how I see it, is if they can use those to really make hay on day 2, because I think that's where the draft is going to be decided, is on day 2 and how many of those picks they can make. But then again, hey, Roy Lopez, he was a 6th round pick, and he performed admirably his rookie season. So I think that either way, I totally expect Nick to wheel and deal.
I do too. I mean, they showed last year that they're not afraid to be aggressive to go get the guys that they want. And I would imagine that's the same case here, because they don't need a ton of rookies. Like when we had John McClain on last week, he told us they don't want too many rookies. They're going to put a big emphasis on guys who fit their scheme and fit their talent threshold. And I expect them to be aggressive. It's just going to be, we're all very curious who that is that fits the criteria.
Yeah, and that's the fun of the NFL draft. And, of course, the draft is going to be a big part of reconstructing the Texans, and they've still got some premium picks in 2023. They got the twin first rounders, and that leads me to this next question. Is there anyone intriguing among the 2023 QB class? Because I just posted on Texans Wire on Wednesday how C.J. Stroud could be someone that'd be a little bit fascinating if things don't work out with Davis Mills. Of course, you got Bryce Young from Alabama. Is there anybody that jumps out at you that you'd like to watch over this next football season to see if they can be the guy?
My eyes personally will be all on Bryce Young. I liked him the most last year, and he's going to have to – I mean, his biggest thing will be stuff off the field. It's going to be durability concerns and size threshold. C.J. Stroud obviously is a guy to watch, and he'll just need to do it again and kind of show off some tools in his tool belt that will differentiate him from the Ohio State mold. But I would say Stroud is going to project as the number one because he's got the stature, he's got the film. But for me, Bryce Young was magic last season for Alabama, and I want to see if he can do that again and if he can stay on the field at that size, because he was playing better football, in my opinion. I mean, that's why he won the Heisman.
For sure. And I think that it'd be funny if they took Tanner McKee from Stanford just because they have a Stanford guy. But, I mean, I think that McKee would have to have an incredible season in David Shaw's offense. But that would just be kind of ironic if they used a Stanford guy.
Stop it.
For another Stanford guy. I think, you know, it's funny because Spencer Rattler, he went to South Carolina after everything that went down with Oklahoma and their coach going to USC. It'd be funny if he started entering the discussions as a first-round quarterback again.
Well, I think Rattler was gone no matter what just because it ended so ugly at OU. And then the quarterback who was going to start at OU transferred to USC. We're in a crazy era of college football. Yeah, I'll be cheering for Spencer Rattler just because when guys go through adversity like that, it is fun to watch them overcome and figure it out. If he can do it at South Carolina, it'll be really impressive. Those are not going to be Big 12 defenses he's going up against. Every team is going to be like the Baylor Bears.
None of these guys jump out at me the way that the 2017 draft class did heading into their 2016 season. So, like Patrick Mahomes, for example, when he was at Texas Tech, I thought wherever he goes, he's going to make an impact. Clemson had a quarterback that he was, ooh, you know, part of their national championship games and so forth, and he thought he's going to make an impact where he goes. I don't. When I look at these guys, I don't necessarily see that. And if they are like Bryce Young, they have a concern like, well, he's short.
Well, Bryce Young is a better pro prospect than Patrick Mahomes was. I'm sorry. If we don't use hindsight, his film is better. The numbers are better. The mechanics look better. I mean, Mahomes was all over the place. We all were worried about whether or not his scheme could ever translate, about how he processed the game. And I don't, what I remember about that Clemson quarterback, I'm struggling to remember his name right now. He kept turning the ball over. Everyone was concerned at the rate at which he threw interceptions. They were not perfect prospects.
With Mahomes, it's not hindsight for me because I was in the middle of the Big 12. And so what I saw was he was a gunslinger. So at worst, he was going to be Jay Cutler. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fair, but I think there were the national consensus was that there were definitely some holes in the Patrick Mahomes prospect profile.
I can't believe that like Mitch Trubisky entered that whole discussion though. That was crazy.
Big white guy playing in a Southern school. It tale as old as time. Yeah, I don't know how he beat those guys, especially when Watson had led his conference in throwing. Like, he wasn't even the best quarterback in the ACC, and scouts taught themselves into he was the best quarterback in the country.
Yeah, and of course Chicago, they fell for it. All right, here's what I think's interesting is you had a mock draft that came out on Wednesday, and again, you just belted it out a Minute Maid. But I noticed when I was putting it together that it was running back heavy. You had two running backs taken. I mean, that's really adding youth to the running back stable. Why did you have Houston going with two running backs in the draft?
Well, I think if they don't take one in the first 2 days, which in my mock draft, for those who didn't read, I have Houston waiting until pick 107 and taking Florida's Dameon Pierce. The thing is about waiting, these are some lower, I think they have a good ceiling, but they're also lower floor guys. And there's an advantage with all these day three picks and a mock where I'm not allowed to trade to swing on guys. So in the sixth round, Abram Smith from Baylor is there, and he is an explosive runner. He runs hard, and we haven't seen everything he can do at the position because of how late he transferred. And that's a high upside pick. And our running back room is old. I mean, we're really betting it all on Marlon Mack, who's coming off of an Achilles tear, and 34, 35-year-old Rex Burkhead. So for me, it's just put talent out onto the field, especially those six-round picks, a bit of a crapshoot, and see what sticks. And Abram Smith has the talent profile that you really hope that it works and that he can force his way onto the field as a rookie.
Do you think Marlon Mack makes it past June with the Texans?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that he has a – I mean, we'll need to see who they draft. Because
okay,
I guess
that's fair.
There is a – like, let's say they take Breece Hall at 37. It's all about how many running backs do you want to roster. Because Breece Hall will be your number one. Rex Burkhead played too well last year. He's not going anywhere. He's your number two. And let's say they only want to have three active running backs on game day. Marlon Mack, this is why he kind of fell out of favor in Indianapolis, he does not play special teams. So if you need a third one who's going to play special teams, then he's gone. But if you're going to roster four running backs, which I think Houston did last year, then I would think Marlon Mack sticks as the third. I think Royce Freeman's a bum. There's no way he makes it past week two of the preseason.
You remember I said why they need to have Freeman on the roster, why they had to sign him back, was so he could be the glass jaw for someone like Breece Hall, you know, just to say, okay, here's the competition. Can you play him off the roster when it's basketball on grass?
Yeah, I don't think running backs need to go. This isn't a quarterback competition. Running backs just come in and they do it. I'm still upset that we re-signed Royce Freeman. I'm pretty mad about it. He would be the guy that I don't think will make the team because he is such a well-known commodity, and it is so obvious that it is not a successful NFL running back.
And that's what I'm saying, though, with Marlon Mack is he's also a known commodity with an Achilles injury.
He's had his best season is better than Royce Freeman's. We haven't seen him in 2 years. I think there are some questions to be answered with Marlon Mack that I would be more excited to explore.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, he was the guy. He had over 1,000 yards that 2019 season. And then Indianapolis go ahead anyway, and they grab Jonathan Taylor in the second round. But I guess that's what you have to do when they have that offensive line. You know, the draft, it's so imminent. It's a week away. It is like 180 hours away, if you're listening to this right now, when we debut on Thursday mornings.
I cannot wait, man. I've put my heart and soul into this draft class, and I'm just excited to see who it is. Also for it just to end at this point, but mostly, I want to see who's going to be a Houston Texan and who we'll be talking about in July and August.
Yeah, I'm just really, really excited about those two picks. Who are they going to take? What's the board going to do? because that's the other excitement is what if you, I mean, Jacksonville does something crazy and then they go with Evan Neal and then Detroit decides they want Malik Willis. Yeah, and then you've got your pick of Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau and Sauce Gardner and Kyle Am. It's just, it's fascinating. It really is like Christmas morning, and you've got double the presents to open.
I'm starting to talk myself into the idea that Evan Neal could be the first pick again. There's just, I feel like Aiden Hutchinson's ceiling is not what you want to do with the number one pick. All right, it's going to be a crazy night. Literally no one knows what's going to happen at any of the picks. It's usually the sign of a bad draft, but for the entertainment product of it, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and that's why they put it in primetime on a Thursday night. Now, also on the Texans Talk podcast this week, John and I are going to make the rounds and talk to as many prospects as we can. We want to thank Warren High School and Warren, Arkansas coach Bo Hembray for joining us on the podcast. And you can find me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane. You can find John on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. Follow us on Twitter at The Texans Wire. And, you know, we're coming down the home stretch, John.
That we are, Mark. Let's finish this one really strong. All right. Have a wonderful morning, everyone. Go Texans.